Welcome to the Legacy Leader Show, where we deep dive into real and raw thought leadership lessons from today's and tomorrow's legacy builders. In each episode, we bring you visionary leaders, and today this is nothing short than most amazing guest in 2025 to have with us today in studios, who is not only shaping industries, driving impact, but also redefining what it means to lead with a purpose. I have in studio Matthew McCracken, a dynamic and passionate educator who is also dealing with over two decades of experience in transformation in schools, empowering educators, students, and amplifying marginalized voices. He is also behind GenExplore.org, which I cannot wait to find out more. He's also obviously known as a humanistic explorer, educator, and leader that is going to share what it takes to really do that in 2025. Without further ado, let me bring in conversation Matthew. Matthew, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so honored to be here, Isabella.
Absolutely. It's honor and privilege. And I know it's so much to your background. And I wanted to make sure that in our conversation, our listeners discover more depth of what behind everything that you do. But before we deep dive into some of these big topics, do you mind sharing a little bit about yourself? Where did you grow up and what brought you in to be so passionate about education and leadership?
So I grew up in California's Central Valley, one of the farming areas, little city called Porterville, right at the base of the Sierra Nevadas. And I grew up there. And I spent most of my summers on my grandparents' farm in San Luis Obispo, California. So I had a lot of wonderful opportunities growing up. And when I left school, I went straight into the U.S. Marine Corps. And then I continued to benefit from fantastic fortune. They sent me to the language school in Monterey, where I learned Korean. I spent 10 years in the Marine Corps. I spent time in business in the Central Valley with a small wireless communications business, cell phones and pagers and two-way radios. And it wasn't until later, and it's interesting because when I reflect back on high school, I remember in high school thinking, you know, I want to have some careers. And then at some point I want to come back and I want to go into education because of just some of the wonderful educators I'd seen in my high school as a student. And I then forgot all about that. And yet somehow years later came back and found my way into education. And it's all been here in California. My only time outside of California has been mostly my time in the Marine Corps, you know, working in South Korea and the East Coast, Washington, D.C. and Virginia and Maryland and Texas. But I love to travel. I love languages. I love cultures. And I feel like I've really been so fortunate to benefit from the perspectives that being an educator gives you into the lives and struggles and various circumstances of all kinds of different people, and that almost sacred opportunity to influence our young people, to be there to support them and help them grow and see them become incredible human beings.
That is so powerful. First of all, I wanted just to say a thank you for your service. And also for passion for cultures and languages, because we share that amazing passion. And obviously as educators, it's just a wonderful to see what you do with your own journey and how you pivot and how you continue to be a lifelong learner. And then also how you're now impacting a new generation of the leaders. You're doing something tremendously important, because right now it's the lowest trust in leadership. And it's also the lowest trust just in general and in the business arena. And a lot of youth, a lot of high schoolers, a lot of children are asking, what are the great role models? And what is the answer? What do we say? And how do we really demonstrate that? That is one of the most painful conversations that I have to say I have in the modern time. Do you mind sharing a little bit from your perspective how you address that and how you navigate that complexity?
Well, yeah, and that whole concept is something near and dear to my heart, because I remember that moment when I lost my father in 2014, and I had this moment of suddenly feeling like, not, of course, not just with my father, but as I looked around the world, I felt like we were losing so many of those voices, so many of those adult voices, those voices of reason, with dignity and respect and compassion for others. And it was an unsettling feeling. And I think what that led to for me, and of course what it invariably leads to for so many people in leadership positions, is that there's a day when you wake up and you realize it's me. It's time for me to step up. Those before me stepped up and did their part. Now I need to step up and do something. And, you know, the young people that are looking for the leadership, I think that's one of the critical things that we need to remind them, is that whether it's now, next week, next month, 10 years from now, there's going to be a time when it's your turn. There's going to be a time when it is absolutely critical that you engage and that you become part of it. Because there is no magical they. It is not they leading this world. It is actual people. And we can all either sit by silently and just let the world happen, or we can be a part of it and engage.
That is excellent perspective. And you are not only, again, being a lifelong learner, but you're engaging in such amazing ways, leveraging technology, leveraging your knowledge and culture and innovation. And for everybody watching and listening, if you didn't have a chance to see the channel, as well as videos that you have on TikTok and YouTube, please, please go. We'll make sure you get the link and opportunity to do that. But do you mind sharing, how did you come up with this amazing trifecta, combining those opportunities and to create and engage not only thought-provoking content, but to address these really pivotal, hot topics?
Well, I really think it's a combination of things. And it was partly the times we were going through. It was partly the stage in life I was reaching, where I really, you know, increasingly felt like there were things I wanted to speak to. There were things I needed to say. You know, as I've gone through life, I've realized more and more that so much of life becomes about ensuring that I live my life in a way that allows me to be at peace and to sleep at night. I'm not always going to be right. I'm not always going to be perfect. I'm not always going to be successful in everything, but I need to be able to lay down at night and know that I did my part. I did my best. I said what I needed to say. I stood on principles, on morals, on values, and contributed in that way. And so for me, 2020 was really probably one of the big turning points. And so it was that combination of reaching that point in life where I was looking for a way to speak up. And then by accident, one of my children put up a video on TikTok. And, you know, of course, I love and support my children. And so I wanted to hear them sing. So I downloaded the app and I got on TikTok, and I was quickly hooked on TikTok by the way that the algorithm, the For You page, seemed to be so different from any other social media I'd seen, that it actually quickly dialed in on the things that we were interested in. Like, you know, for me, it was the philosophy and the education and the languages and the world travel and so forth. But more than that, it was the authenticity that I was seeing on TikTok, that there was something different about how people were showing up on TikTok, being authentic, being vulnerable, being real, and the ways that that was allowing people to see and hear each other from around the world and connect in ways that I hadn't seen happening before. And so here I was looking for a place that I could use my voice, looking for some place to funnel my creativity. And then this all also hit around the time of the summer of that George Floyd was killed. And then not too far off from that, then January 6th. And, you know, as an educator, we have a duty and a responsibility to remain impartial, to not push our students to the left or to the right, but to remain neutral. There are board policies in most school districts that that require this of us. But it's in these turbulent times that I started to see certain things that were not about simply Democrat or Republican, but were about right and wrong. It was the gallows on the Capitol lawn that more than anything made me realize that we have a duty to speak up and say this is not us. This is not what the foundations of our country stand for. And so I increasingly found that TikTok was a viable platform for me to use my voice. And I've always tried to maintain a degree of that impartiality while also being able to speak to the underlying principles and values and ethics and morals and the thinking skills, the critical thinking, getting to, you know, understanding, you know, like what is a straw man argument? How are straw man arguments being used to divide our country, to mislead people, to misinform people? So, and of course, we're in uncertain times. And so I've branched out and I've been working on building the YouTube platform, because we don't know in these times how long TikTok's going to be here. We might not even know how long YouTube might be a viable platform. So that's kind of what's driven me in these last few years. And I've come to cherish TikTok because of the way it seems to, unlike other social media, build community, build connection, allow people to see each other. And I've seen so many incredible leaders there on TikTok. The thing about these things to me is that, like we talked about, that need to speak up and be leaders at some point. That requires risk taking. As an educator, it is a professional calculated risk to be on TikTok. But leaders must be capable of taking risks.
I agree 100% with you. And actually, that's the way I find you. And even though I'm not posting much, I'm a consumer of it because I learn from so many different perspectives, nationally, but also internationally. And as you shared, it's such a powerful platform, not only, and that's obviously reflected in your engagement with your lives, with your videos, with your content, how many people you really bring in, how many people lean in, want to hear it, want to hear if historic events, want to learn about different risks and situations, or just want to really validate what is really happening, feeling that we're not alone, and sense of belonging. And you built such amazing community as a result of it, with great followings on both platforms. And what I really want to share, obviously, the words of wisdom and your approach, how you show up as a leader, it's reflection on some of the questions and posts and people's engagement that I'm seeing, which really, I wanted to say again, reflects, it's not about them and us and left and right, but it's about right and wrong. And I love that approach, because if we don't know where the guardrails are, and we don't know that certain things are interpreted in many different ways, like historical events, as we're seeing. We've seen some of the most recent historical events, but we're looking also at historical events, mm-hmm. 20, 30, 50, 100 years and centuries prior, and how those events are being interpreted depending who wrote those historical books, right? And right. How many of those events are being interpreted depending on the narrative we see and which books we have in the schools. And as a result, who is teaching those lectures, which narrative we want to share. And some of those are very beneficial, and some of them are extremely damaging. And as a result, we see a lack of knowledge, overall knowledge, and a lack of shared understanding, and as a result, a shared opportunity to truly do something cohesively together, right? In an order, it's a problem solving and whatnot. So do you mind sharing a little bit of your perspective from how you're navigating that marginalized community through that inclusive, innovative, and impactful ways through your lens and recipe for others that they can follow that you've been so successful at?
Well, first, I think I'd go back to, I benefited from teams that I work with, some absolutely phenomenal leaders who had the foresight. And we started right around 2020, 2021. We started doing an administrative book study on Ibram Kendi's work, How to Be an Anti-Racist. And I have to say that that is one of the most transformational books that I've read in recent years. And it was Ibram Kendi's ability in his book to model the reflection, to model the vulnerability, to engage in really difficult, controversial ideas that helped me reflect on everything that I had come up with in my upbringing and in my communities, the things I'd been taught. And it really helped me better as I was, you know, as many of us were shocked by that summer of 2020, the summer of George Floyd's killing. For many, that was the first time they really saw some of the things that were going on. And then going deeper with things like that book study, and I'd say even, you know, another piece, understand that the role of an administrator is often sitting in an office with parents and students who are going through some of their most difficult times in school, whether they're facing some type of a mental health struggle or challenges at home or disciplinary consequences that they're facing in school, and hearing those stories directly, hearing what people are going through, hearing their struggles. All of that for me just really combined and helped me want desperately to get into a space where I could use all of the privilege and opportunities that I've had to speak up, to amplify voices, to help people who might tend to get defensive when they hear about ideas like diversity, equity, and inclusion, to help kind of change their perspective and help them see. You know, I often describe that one of the most transformational things that Ibram Kendi's book did for me is that it helped me get to a space where when I hear someone say, "Hey, that's racist," rather than bristling and digging in and getting defensive, I'm comfortable getting in a space going, "Tell me more. I want to learn more because I very much want to be anti-racist. And if I've said or done something that has impacted someone else in that way, then I need to learn more and understand better about it so that I can avoid doing that in the future." Whereas for so many, the knee-jerk reaction when they hear any concern about racism is to just immediately jump into, "I'm not racist. I can't be racist. I'm not racist, therefore I can't be." And when the reality is that we can all have an impact on someone that we didn't want to have, that we didn't intend to have. Apologies, I may have wandered a little bit there from where the question started, but.
No, you're right, spot on. And I love that you are sharing also what it means to be administrator and that balanced act of academic excellence and then students' well-being, but also dealing with racism, with bullying, and as you mentioned, with mental health and fragmented families where children have the best either support or role models to look up to when it's just that in the school. Not everybody have a good sense of identity or very well domestic upbringing as a result of what's going on. And then when you not also have proper tools or attention to it, you don't know how certain things can be perceived. The fact that you care, the fact that you are being vice president and principal and board member and also teacher and, you know, did all these spectrums of the roles and that you're doing things from multi lens. It's a very enlightening because obviously right now we're seeing a hybrid, not only in education and approach to it, but also hybrid ways of how do you lead. So what would you say for everybody watching and listening that are struggling instituting that in their educational system or frankly in their companies where, you know, it's not exempt just to schools. What would you say, what a piece of advice would be?
Well, first of all, I would advise people don't turn away from the ideas underpinning diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I would say lead with empathy. Lead with empathy. And Stephen Covey, to me, one of the most brilliant things he ever said was the piece of seek first to understand and then to be understood. I've often described leadership when someone goes into a new leadership role, one of the biggest mistakes that is often made is they go into that leadership role and like jumping into a car that's already moving down the road, and they get into that driver's seat and they immediately spin the wheel, taking a drastic turn without having first gotten into that role in that position and sought to understand, gotten their bearings, engaged in time spent learning about all of the people, getting to know them and understand them, exercising your empathy for them and knowing them as people and understanding the challenges and the strengths and the weaknesses, the opportunities and the threats for that organization.
That is very great advice, but I'm also what I'm thinking, as you mentioned, from just that diversity, inclusion and lens, equity and inclusion. Why do you think it's such a huge threat? Because made me think about it last year in October, which is like less than 3 months ago, basically, or less than 4 months ago, I spoke at Google on for their diversity, inclusion, and equity event, DEI event on global scale. And it's so interesting to see how many companies jump the ship or change their approach to it. And I feel like when it's something misunderstood, mm-hmm. how easy it is to hate or label, or when it's possibly appearing as a threat, what is it, if you don't mind sharing from your perspective?
I think it's the straw man argument that's been built around diversity, equity, and inclusion. And specifically that straw man argument that has separated diversity, equity, and inclusion from the words, taken them down to the abbreviation DEI, so that we've already begun to strip away the meaning, and then framed it as hiring quotas, framed it as hiring based on race, not based on qualifications, which is a complete mischaracterization of what DEI is. And that then therefore is the straw man that is so easily defeated, because of course, if that's what DEI was, it wouldn't be a good thing for us. Mm-hmm. But that's not what it is. And ironically, my experience has been that the people who dig in most firmly against diversity, equity, inclusion are the people most unwilling to learn about what it is. Now, there's another angle to this, and I think this is also a very important one. Let's remember that human beings, leaders, are imperfect, are fallible. Mm-hmm. And I have no doubt that there are examples of DEI efforts that were ineffective mm-hmm. or not well planned, mm-hmm. or where the leaders of those efforts themselves didn't quite understand DEI, and therefore maybe there's some truth to the argument that this type of DEI wasn't good. Mm-hmm. Because it's, you can't say that it's always going to be perfectly done by the best leaders, by the ones who themselves most understand it. And I have no doubt that there have been cases where people have been put in charge of DEI who maybe weren't the perfect leaders for those efforts.
Yes, and it's hiring. I love what you said earlier, how important it is to hire based on qualification. And a lot of times that's kind of reflected as a merit based on the merit, right? Versus, again, just to check the box to give that data to support to say we also are having diversity within the organization. But what we're missing is diversity in the dialogue, in conversation, different points of view, different experience. Right now, mm-hmm. you and I have a very diverse conversation coming from very different angles and life paths and experiences, yet as a result of it, creating something that's so much more impactful. Also, I'm creating inclusive dialogue with you where it could be better and also pivot on some of these elements that you're sharing, or just, if nothing else, validate that I'm on the right track and that this really makes sense, right? And as a result of inclusion, we know what happens. We're making better choices. We're making smarter decisions. And when we also look at from equity lens, we have an opportunity to bring other on that journey, because it's everything that's great being accomplished, we don't do it by ourselves. We do it because of great team, because of the great organizations that we build, big, great clients that we choose to work with, great ripple effect of community as a result of what's being offered. And that is the part that I feel like addressing these elephants in the room and just this cliches or narrative, it's so important, because I have to say, seeing over the last 2 decades increase in bullying among youth, I was like, okay, it's a lot of opportunities where it needs to be fixed. But then when you see increase in bullying amongst the adults, I was like, of course, if adults are doing gaslighting and doing bullying and the youth is exhibiting this, it's you just giving the pass for them to continue with behavior that is detrimental, that is toxic, and frankly, that is not giving us opportunity to create a positive impact that we're going for.
Right. Right. And I want to speak a little bit to diversity. The school that I'm currently working at is one of the most diverse schools you could find in this country. And I want to say something by way of encouragement, that I can tell you that what I see of the youth on our campus, where we've got nearly 2,200 students, incredibly diverse. And I can tell you that I do not see the problems that we see more broadly in our society reflected among our student population. Among our student population, I see students who embrace diversity, who embrace different cultures, who accept and embrace those with different abilities, those who are facing different challenges, students who support and uplift one another, and are ones who very much give me hope about a better world being built.
I'm so glad to hear that. That is such a great positive news to hear as we are tackling and just starting the third month of 2025 and seeing so much in the last 2 months as this year started that is putting a lot of people in a much more difficult and challenging situation economically, socially, politically, but also health-wise and as you mentioned, mental health, because it's so much unknown and it's very challenging and difficult. But one thing I can definitely see also is this humanistic explorer within you that really leads from the heart, the leadership from the heart. Do you mind sharing a little bit about what that looks like and how is again creating this tremendous ripple effect?
That's a good question. One of the realities I've come to learn about life is that we really are shaped by our experiences. And it's that depth of experience oftentimes that helps us tap into our humanity, our compassion, and our empathy. So I've reached a point in life where I've lost many people, where I've experienced personal hardships, where I've been through difficult times. And then layer on top of that, like I describe, I've sat in offices and listened to parents. Two stories come to mind. One is a student who was very upset one day, and I sat down with her to ask what was wrong. And the student had lost her mother in a car accident. I knew that. And she was upset because her younger siblings were very angry with her. See, her younger siblings, she had actually pulled her younger siblings out of that burning vehicle. And she couldn't get her mom out. And her younger siblings couldn't forgive her for not getting her mom out. And this was the weight that this student carried coming to school every day. And so as we're trying to emphasize the importance of attendance and being at school and going to class and earning good grades, you start to see the weight that is on this teenager's shoulders. Another student that comes to mind is one who I think it was for most of her life, from about the age of 9 on, she's been helping care for her bedridden father, including helping use the breathing bag apparatus when he goes into a crisis, helping manage his medications, carrying this burden together with her mother. So that humanism, that compassion, that empathy, I think it comes both from our life experiences, also from our proximity to those who have also gone through struggles. I think it's when I reflect back on my early life, I was very fortunate. I didn't experience death near me through most of my younger years. I didn't experience that much hardship. And even like I remember when I was in the Marine Corps talking about how I felt like I lived a charmed life because I got this great job as a Korean linguist. I got these great duty stations. I had all these great opportunities. Of course, I think that contrast itself of being able to reflect back on that and then my other experiences and all these stories that I get to hear, they've compelled me to want to speak up, to help others understand what people go through, to help people understand other perspectives, the perspectives of those who have immigrated, those who have been language learners. As a language learner myself, I know how hard that is. And I see immigrant populations being treated as though they are less, they are inferior, they are unintelligent. Yet these are people who are surviving in a language that was not their own, that they didn't learn growing up, that they have had to learn as an adult. These are people who are extremely intelligent and tenacious and driven. And they don't deserve to be treated that way. They deserve to be welcomed and accepted and embraced and appreciated for what they contribute to our communities and to our cities and our country. So sorry for just trailing off there, but that's where the question about humanism leads me.
That's amazing, and I love the emphasis on empathy, and it's just so great to see your close cultural competency and how you leverage their resilience and for transformation, and then for also to make that student impact. Which again, for all the educators, no matter if we're dealing with elementary school or high school or university or doctoral candidates or postdoc fellows, we will have to change, obviously, approach how we go through because those stories are really amplifying those marginalized voices that often we don't want to see or just simply don't want to hear. And we have assumption about, or we have preconceived motion based on what media is sharing or community around us or voices that we chose to hear or follow that are maybe the loudest and most in front of us. So how do you also, I obviously that leads you to amplify marginalized voices even more, but what do you think there are some of the biggest systematic barriers for that advocacy, for that equality, and how you see your utilization of technology, social media, directly creating this positive ripple effect based on comments and engagement with your audience?
Well, I think, first of all, we oftentimes exist in kind of silos or segments of society. my experiences growing up in the Central Valley of California, I've described it as a very binary diversity. It was almost entirely either Hispanic or Caucasian. And so I feel like that diversity is very much a part of me. I mean, it's why, despite never having formally studied Spanish language is something that certainly the understanding and the few simple words of it comes very easily and natural and comfortable to me. When I came to the Sacramento region in 2018, I came to this school that was so much more dramatically diverse. And one of the key memories I think of about that is I remember greeting students at the gates. And of course, again, this is a large school, 2,200 students. But I remember greeting students at the gates, and I was shocked at the unwillingness to engage. People wouldn't respond, wouldn't make eye contact, would keep their earbuds in and just not even acknowledge my existence. And at the time, I didn't know what I represented to many of those students. I didn't have the awareness of what my appearance and who I was looked like and what their past interactions with people who looked like me might have been.
Wow.
And of course, just as I needed time to get to know my school community, they also needed time to get to know me.
Yes.
And forgive me, I'm losing the question a little bit here, but it's that as we're all in these silos, in these segmented parts of society where we only see, you know, for me, it was that binary diversity. There are some areas we know that we can go to where everybody looks like me. There are other pockets of other binary or limited amounts of diversity. And I think what's so valuable about our online platforms, I find particularly TikTok, is that opportunity to open people's eyes to people, to communities, to sights, to sounds, to experiences that they haven't previously had an opportunity to hear. The book study that I referenced, reading Ibram Kendi's words, hearing from other people of color around the table in those book studies and listening to those stories. My hope is that I can take the opportunities and privilege and positionality that I have to help share some of those stories, to amplify those voices, to encourage others to hear people that they might not otherwise be listening to.
That is so powerful. And what's so interesting is also how you push that with the Gen Explorer. Excuse me. I'm sorry, I will edit this. Just dry air.
It's okay. I know it's been a rough season. I've been struggling with the cough too.
So just it happened from nowhere. So let's kind of just piggyback on that. So with that answer, I'm just really taken by how everything then brings back to that Gen Explorer and genexplorer.org and your current mission that is beyond that and just that being an educator. So in closing, what would you say, not just about obviously your organization that you are also doing so much with to continue to carry that torch and also to be intentionally present and lead with specific drive and passion and desire to continue to positively impact and influence, but also for other leaders that are on the fence, they're not sure how to go about, what would you give them as advice?
Lead like you have nothing to lose and everything to gain. One of the things that I see time and time again that holds leaders back is fear. Fear of losing something. Fear of making a mistake. I think back to Colin Powell, who said that sometimes what's more important is not that we make the right decision, but that we make a decision, that decisiveness is important. And it's a balance. It's a balance. We don't want to be reckless as leaders. We don't want to be rogue. We do need to be mindful and act with intention, but we cannot allow ourselves to be led by fear. And we must be willing to take some risks. There is no true leadership without risk taking.
That is so powerful.
So it's a matter of taking the right risks, taking the calculated risks. And so as you're being a risk taker, not being reckless.
And right now we see a lot of recklessness.
At the end of your life, what will be your legacy? What will you leave behind for future generations? For the world, join the world messenger, Isabella Lundberg. Each week as she brings you a new distinguished guest from the business, sports, or entertainment world to share their success, their struggles, and their lessons. They will share their insights into current hot topics that affect everyone. Isabella facilitates an intimate, vulnerable environment to find the true value of humanity and real leadership. Are you ready for your legacy? The legacy that matters?